Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cybersecurity Matters podcast. My name is Christian Redshaw, and with me is my co-host, Mr. Dominic Vogel. Dominic, joining us virtually, who do we have in the virtual hot seat today?
Today we have Mike Winterfield. He's the founder and CEO of Impact Investments. And, you know, he's a really, really interesting guy, very interesting narrative around his background with sort of what brought him into being in the sort of venture capitalist arena now. So I know in particular, I think the two of us are going to really enjoy that conversation.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what Mike has to say. So we'll bring Mike on and we will be right back.
Mike, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to join Christian and I. We really appreciate it, and we're really looking forward to chatting with you.
Thanks for having me.
So, Mike, please tell us your life story and your business story and what brought you to today.
In 2 minutes or less, right?
Yes, please. Yeah. We might give you three.
Okay, fair. I started with probably a somewhat traditional corporate career, started in sales and moved into sales leadership, and then ultimately ended up in sort of more operations type roles and executive type roles. And I did that across a variety of different industries. And at some point through that journey, realized that I had a real interest in doing something entrepreneurial, and I also had a real interest in doing something I felt could make a difference and contribute to some of the environmental or social issues. And so about 3 years ago, I had the concept of founding Active Impact Investments, which is kind of my day job right now. And we were able to launch with a first fund, an impact venture capital type fund with $10 million in assets under management. And we've been investing at the seed stage across Canada. We're about to make our first investment down into the United States. Mm-hmm.
So, Mike, your organization is called a B Corp, and you know, that's a term which I actually only just learned about recently. But wondering, through your own words, if you could sort of share with our audience what that means and why it's important.
Yeah, for sure. So, I think the independent third party that administers that certification is called B Lab, and it essentially started as a group of individuals that were trying to start a movement and a community that would sort of try to measure any company in any geography in any industry against a similar set of standards and try to encourage commerce across those companies, try to get those companies together to learn from each other, try to get those companies to look for investments, drive community towards them, lobby the government for particular legislative changes. And what the sort of the subtext of the message is with B Corp is doing business for good. So essentially it's companies that are socially conscious is maybe a way to word it. So they are familiar with the impacts that they have on society and the environment, and run their business in such a way that profit isn't the only thing that guides their behavior. In fact, mm-hmm. you know, the ask of B Lab and a B Corp certification is that you would put profit either on par with these other stakeholders or potentially even below some of these other stakeholders, like, you know, the community and the environment and how you treat your employees and how you treat your customers. Mm-hmm.
So in this COVID-19 crisis, how has it been for the companies that you're involved with and invested in? Have they fared better than other companies by comparison as you've seen?
We hope so. It's really early, so I think time will tell. But you're hitting on, I think, a really interesting point, and it is that we do believe that companies that have a purpose that is greater than simply earning a profit mm-hmm. should be more resilient as they go through economic downturns. Excuse me. And it wasn't a big enough of a category back during the Great Recession in 2008 to be able to have a, you know, a large enough sample size to be able to talk through this. But what's emerged so far is, you know, on the large scale, corporations and publicly traded, we're already seeing some early indications of those portfolios performing better, those that had sort of a stronger lens, a stronger ESG screening lens. And then, like I said, the jury's still out on private, but I would certainly suspect that our portfolio and those that have carefully chosen portfolios with a particular purpose beyond profit will be more resilient during these periods of time.
When and you know in terms of this being you know being more of a I would say maybe a common item where people and society as a whole are expecting to see organizations and businesses move beyond like you're saying they're just moving beyond just focusing on profit is this more than just a trend like is this going to be something which we see being a true competitive differentiator in the very near future where even consumers focus on organizations that do put sort of the people and environment ahead of profit?
Yeah, well, so A, no, I don't think it's a trend. I think it will be, I think it is the future. And I think it's happened in stages that we're seeing. So for one, you have the demographic shift, obviously. So a much higher level of awareness and interest in this as new generations enter the workforce, and that's you know backed up by scores of different studies. Deloitte does one particular sort of millennial-based study every year, and it's been actually shocking to see the data that's come out of that in the last 3 years. And so I would say for the last few years, being a certified B Corp or having an organization that you know, solves an important social or environmental issue has been a way to certainly attract some of the best talent and retain some of the best talent. And that alone is already a pretty interesting differentiator and speaks to levels of engagement. So basically, you know, how hard people are willing to, you know, work to do to put out their best work product. And then I think on the consumer side, we've seen some of the consumer trends changing, but it will be interesting to see during an economic downturn how much consumers are willing to still pay a premium to make the right choice. I think that will kind of come under challenge. And so, you know, the businesses that we really love, and these are a rarity, and it's hard to find them, but we really love businesses where the way that they generate their revenue, so basically whatever product or service that they sell, it is inextricably linked to the positive impact that they create. So in other words, the positive impact isn't charity, it's not an afterthought, it's not born out of a particular department like the CSR team, you know, where you're doing some donations or what have you. It is directly tied to how you generate your revenue. And even better if you can do it in such a way that what you're doing is for instance, sustainable, more sustainable than what the market's currently offering and comes at a similar price point or even a lower price point. Yeah, I mean, those ones become, in my mind, the real no-brainers. There's not a lot of sacrifice there.
Mike, can you give us a story of a company that you either work with or that you know about that has really, as a B Corp, exemplified the values of, you know, helping people and helping the environment on all of the things that, you know, a B Corp stands for?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't want to, speak poorly of B Corp, so please, you know, take what I'm going to say with a grain of salt. But I would say there are companies that are certified B Corps, which to me is a very important and meaningful designation, and that's why we've invested the time and the money to become one. But there are some that are certified B Corps, and they do it from the perspective of do no harm, and there are other companies that are not B Corps, but they actually do solve an important social and environmental issue. And so I wanted to make the distinction that our fund, the companies that we invest in, it's not enough to just be a B Corp. And it's not even mandatory that a company is a B Corp. That's a bonus. That's a nice to have. But what is the mandatory criteria for us is that you solve an important social or environmental issue.
Okay. Is there a company that comes to mind that is achieving this?
Well, so every single one of our portfolio companies. But I guess just to kind of make what our companies do or use an example maybe a little more relatable. So we've invested in one company called Clear Renewables, and they're really, you know, quite the sweet spot for us in terms of what we would look for, because they're enterprise B2B subscription software in terms of a revenue model, and they are reducing GHG emissions in the atmosphere. And so for us, that's a really perfect fit. And we sort of met them at the right timing in their trajectory in terms of how much revenue they had generated and how much money they were trying to raise and what their valuation was and all those things that timing is so important on. But what Clear Renewables does is they have software that monitors a number of pieces of information that are coming back from sensors on wind and solar assets. And they basically provide predictions and insights into how to run those assets more efficiently. The net result of that is that oftentimes their customers will experience a 5% increase in yield, in energy yield. And so you can directly trace that back to GHG emissions.
Mike, something which I know Christian and I talk about quite a bit is how cybersecurity gets, or even cyber risk gets looked at by investors if they're about to invest in an organization or invest in a company. I'm curious to know your thoughts, because I know the answer, you know, very much varies in the VC and the investor community. But you know, when you're looking at investing in an organization, different levels of risk pop up. How often does cyber risk or data risk pop up? Is that sort of ad hoc? Does it pop up all the time? Not at all. I'm curious to your thoughts on that.
You know, for us at the seed stage, which is where we are investing, the risks of other factors are just, they're so much higher that I would say that sort of cybersecurity risk is something that would much more enter at sort of a Series A, Series B type round. As the company becomes a little more sophisticated, grows the team more, has a larger customer base, has more data that have more value that they need to protect, has the resources to be able to invest in that. So I would say for us, quite honestly, it's again kind of a nice to have, not a must have.
Absolutely. No, and that's really interesting insight, something that Christian and I talk about a lot is that, you know, security is very much it's a journey, and the security that you do when you're a startup is going to be very different than the security that you do as a mid-sized organization. And, one of the things which I know that we've always found interesting is just the understanding of sort of when do you start thinking about cyber risk, you know, and I appreciate that you mentioning it there, at least that there's a certain stage when those risks become more material. What are some areas or sort of wording that we can use to better help educate people who are in the investment community? Because again, a lot of this is anecdotal, but a lot of investors that we talk to, and again, even people who are investing in much more mature organizations, they'll look at financial risk, operational risk, personnel risk, but cyber risk isn't on their radar. And, you know, even in Vancouver, there was an example of that with TIO Networks when PayPal bought them. You know, even PayPal didn't do really sufficient due diligence from a cyber risk perspective, and TIO Networks had an active breach, and, you know, PayPal basically just sunk that cost. What are ways which investors can become a bit more in tune with cyber risk, or maybe it's something that we could do better in terms of making sure that we're hitting the right communication notes.
Well, I think customers drive it more than investors, right? And so I think, you know, the way that you see it as an investor first is as part of most people's due diligence, you will look at either all of or a subset of the customer contracts of a company. And as both of you know, I mean, that this is really being driven by customers where they're looking for particular levels of insurance and you know, reduced liability and other provisions like that. And so, you know, we'll either see it that the customer contract demands, you know, particular levels of insurance, or that the customer contract demands particular policies and procedures that are in place that are up to industry standards. So that's the first place we look for it and we see it. And so what you'll tend to garner from that is also companies that are in industries that are sort of privy to more sensitive information or less sensitive information. So the customer contracts tend to be much more onerous, obviously, in companies and industries where that information is very sensitive, like, you know, healthcare and finances, and less sensitive in other companies where perhaps they're collecting data more around sentiment.
That's a really helpful insight for us. We really appreciate you sharing that, Mike. I'm curious to get into your mind as well as, you know, the leadership of your company, your baby, Active Impact Investments. What's on the horizon for you? Where is your focus as this COVID crisis kind of continues on and as it eventually will come to an end? What is your big picture focus on in terms of especially the next steps?
Yeah, well, I mean, our goal and what we need to do is we need to keep deploying capital and we need to keep scaling and growing. I mean, the next stage of fund for us that we target to do will be about $50 million. We're going to move away from a sort of a general impact around environment and social, and we're going to move to a very specific environmental impact and our next fund being very focused on climate change solutions and reducing GHG emissions, and just, you know, something that myself and my business partner have a huge passion for and feel like, you know, really needs to be, you know, a burning issue of our time and requires more people to really kind of lean into that. Mm-hmm. And in the short term, we've got this speed bump, right? We've got this speed bump called COVID that none of us know how it's going to play out. But in the short term, the impact on the portfolio has been, you know, lots of companies have had to do layoffs. Lots of companies are spending a bunch of time sort of figuring out what programs and assistance are available. The time that we spend supporting our portfolio has doubled easily. And I would say I used to budget about a day per week to be there for our portfolio of companies on a post-investment support basis. And now that you know, very easily is kind of 2 days a week. So it does take away some of the time that we have allocated to going out and finding new investment opportunities and being able to do screening and due diligence. But at the same time, we're not in the middle of a raise right now. And so, you know, we have the time to do that. We have the flexibility to shift things around. And it's amazing how many more hours have been added back into my day without commuting here and there to a lot of different meetings. So there is a certain amount of efficiency that's been born from this isolation as well.
I know we have 2 minutes left. So Christian, you want to take the last question before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I think the next thing on my mind as you're sort of describing your vision and the things that you have your hands full with, besides the funding to the organizations that you're investing in and partnering with, you know, I was trying to figure out when I was looking at your main skills, and it just seems to me like you personally kind of cover a lot of different ground when it comes to both on the front end and the operational sides of a business. What is it that you bring into these companies apart from capital?
Yeah, so I mean, we're trying to differentiate ourselves in that way. There are a lot of fund managers who come from a finance background, and so, you know, would be very good at, especially, you know, later stage investments where, you know, the due diligence is, you know, extremely comprehensive, and where you're trying to find, you know, problems or opportunities in the financial statements. Where, you know, for us, it is so much about understanding the capabilities of the founder, and you're betting on a leadership team at this stage, because so much else can change, right? You can change your pricing, you can change which customers you go after, you can pivot your product or service, but, you know, really hard to change the co-founders. What we find with virtually all of our companies is that they are under-resourced, and the first place that people go in that place of understanding is they always think of the finances, but small companies are also under-resourced on their executive team, right? And that's just, you know, that's a function of startups, and it's just what makes sense in terms of where their top line revenue is at. And so yes, I had always thought and dreamed if you know, whatever I used to get paid as an executive, if that amount is not affordable for the typical startup, then, you know, how much could we move the needle if people like myself were willing to kind of roll up their sleeves and help out? And so the first place that we obviously try to dig in and help is with sort of an enterprise B2B sales approach. So things that I learned in my career with a structured approach of, you know, having upwards of 300 salespeople reporting into me. When you take that type of sort of data-driven approach and that disciplined approach, and you apply it to small companies with their first 2, 3, 4, 5 salespeople, it can make a big difference. So we try to bring some of the metrics to bear that might be missing in earlier stage companies.
Awesome. Mike, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your time and for the conversation. Krishan, I truly enjoyed that. That was a very intriguing conversation, to say the least.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks to both of you as well.
Pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks again, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Dominic, that was a really timely message, I think, for our business audience, particularly in this difficult time of navigating business in the pandemic. What were your thoughts on that conversation with Mike?
Well, I thought it was really interesting, sort of Mike explaining sort of the goal of what a B Corp is, and how sort of having socially responsible organizations isn't just a trend. It's very much part of the sort of new sustainable way of businesses being operated well into the future. And I think the COVID situation is very much going to serve as an accelerant for that. So I think it was really interesting hearing Mike explain in, you know, relatively simple terms what a B Corp is and sort of how that's the wave of the future.
Mm-hmm. Specifically, companies that not only just make profits, but they help solve problems for people and for the environment, purpose-driven businesses. So that really resonates and strikes a chord with me. And hopefully it does for you too. So thanks for watching. You can check out our other podcasts on conversationsthatmatter.tv, or you can find us on the Conversations That Matter YouTube channel under Cybersecurity Matters playlist, or you can find us everywhere or anywhere you listen to your podcast normally. And we will see you next week.